Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the weekly podcast where we do play with the needles.
Mm-hmm. We do.
Yep. And this week's guest, returning to us, Mary Corbett. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Christine.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. But a little extra this time, another member of the family, Sarah DeBrie from Pennsylvania. Hi, Sarah.
Hello. Hello.
Yes, Sarah, Mary's sister Sarah, so it's a family thing we're doing here.
I like this.
And what we have, we have two knitters and two needle workers.
That's right.
That's right. Right.
It's going to be like a battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what it's going to be. Yeah. First, we need to decide over what, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't really think it's going to be a battle at all, but.
Mm-hmm. So. Okay, so two stitchers in the family, which raises the question. Now, Mary, you had like a week-long family reunion, you folks did. And so that raises the question, if there are two people who do fiber-type stuff, are there more in the family? Do we have a whole stitch-in when the family gets together?
Well, there are actually eight of us children, and seven are girls, and then the youngest one is a boy, Jim. And I think probably all of us, except maybe one, does some sort of something. So we have quilters, sewers, seamstress, embroidery, knitting, crochet. Yeah, we all do something.
Yep.
All right, so that's a gathering. Everybody comes to the reunion bringing thread.
And needles.
Yeah.
Because, Sarah, you knit, and what other things do you do? You got all kinds of stuff you do here.
I do. I knit. I quilt. I started out with cross stitch a million years ago. And I've done some needlepoint. Mary, what's that stuff that I was doing? And put it down for a little bit.
Crewel work.
Yes, crewel work. Yep.
Multifaceted, we call that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes. Okay, so, all right, Mary, we're recording this 2 days after a major Mary rant over Mill Hill bead packaging. So how bad was it when you flipped the box over?
I did lose the contents of one box, and that's kind of what put me on the rant.
Completely?
That would do it.
Well, it went on the carpet, and by the time it gets on carpet,
forget it.
It just doesn't seem worth scrounging for it. I did get up about, I don't know, maybe 40 beads, but the rest were just scattered. So. That's what set me off. I wasn't grumpy. I didn't want the blog post to sound grumpy. It was just more tongue in cheek. But really, when you have to put a warning sign on packaging, you would think that maybe the packaging could change.
Yeah.
And for something like beads, it's not like there hasn't been good bead containers invented.
That's right.
Yeah, well, on top would work.
Yeah, right? there's a start right there. Yeah.
There you go.
Like I said in the email, you spoke for thousands because I was cheering you on as I read that thing. Because I've lost more than one partial package or more of Mill Hill beads to the point where, you know, you talk about the body hug to open the package. I mean, I learned to put down a towel and literally cut my hands around it and hover over it. As I open it, anything to get that thing open without losing beads. And then they go, I actually use the same container you use, those little containers, because they come out of that package as fast as I can get them out of there.
So pretty much a Ziploc bag would have been better, is what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tidy looking little package hanging on the pegs in the store, and when you get it home, and it's all very nice and tidy until you try to open it. And
you can't blame the company. I mean, I think that's part of of the situation, is that it's compact. It's right. A very compact package. And now that they have that packaging, Well, of course, the cost to change packaging would be enormous.
Right.
So I don't think their packaging is going to change. And, you know, we're probably still going to use Mill Hill beads regardless. So.
Yeah, they kind of, they in many ways have a pretty good dominance in the market.
Yeah, they're easy to find.
Right.
So.
Yeah, no, that's, I was cheering you on. But now, those little boxes that you have, I have those, but I didn't know labels came with them because I've been cutting the labels off of the Mill Hill package and putting it in inside the thing. So there's actual labels. I was not aware.
Yeah, the boxes that I've gotten of that type, they have two sheets of labels that actually fit the lid perfectly. So.
Oh, I have to look into that now. I mean, I'm not going to name names about where I bought my stuff, but labels did not come with it. So,
okay,
I must have to get separate.
So, yeah. So can you describe the package that you guys are using a little bit?
It's it's a tray. It's like an inch and a half maybe deep, a plastic kind of tray, and then there's a clear lid that fits on top of it. And the sides clamp up to hold the lid on. And then inside the tray are these columns that are marked out with just a little rise in the plastic. And then these clear boxes with snap lids fit in those columns. So you can have, I can't remember what the number is. I think it's 80 something little boxes in one small tray, and the tray is about the size of a sheet of paper, maybe 9 by 12, I guess. So they're compact and you can see all the colors of your beads, which is really nice.
That is nice, actually.
Yeah,
I'll have to find a link to get those and the labels, but they're handy. And then you can actually open them without flipping beads all over the place. And
that's right.
And beads are accessible, and the whole thing is very nice, and they stack up in that tray. I don't have the tray; I just have the boxes, but I don't have a large collection of beads, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they also they make a couple different configurations too, so that you can, in some of the trays you might have bigger boxes that take up the space of two of the little boxes. So if your bead collection is varied and you have different sizes or more of a different quantity, you can have different size containers in the tray, which is really nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good package. What I was doing before I discovered those was when I travel a lot of times I'll end up, because it's a show hotel, at better hotels. And so they'll have those little tiny jars of jam. So I've been known to come home with a half dozen of those little things.
Gary, you don't come home with the towels too, do you?
No. I use the jam. I use the jam, but then I go back to my room and rinse them out and then bring them home. So I was storing beads in those, but it's not as handy. And they don't stack real well or anything. And these little boxes do. So, Yeah, but no, you're right. The Mill Hill package is not changing anytime soon. That's locked in. Yeah. So okay. Well, I could just imagine. I could just tell from your rant that a whole box went somewhere because.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah. No, I always figure. I read a couple of things where people have devised ways with vacuums and nylon stockings and other things to collect up the beads that spill. So that tells you yes.
That's true.
And that's why you have children.
Oh. Or cat.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know how well you'd get them back from the cat, though.
That's right.
Yeah,
that it might would not be worth it.
Not in a way that
it would
want
not be worth
them,
it.
Put it that way.
Nope. So, okay, well, I had to hear the story because, yep, I could tell.
Yeah.
Mary was not happy.
But it was really tongue in cheek more than anything, because I know other stitchers experience it. It's like metallic threads. It's just sort of the over, the all encompassing problem of metallic threads, or the all encompassing problem of bead packaging.
Right. Yep. All right. Well, Sounds like you've cooled off now, so we should be okay.
Doesn't take long.
So Sarah, I was curious. We've tried a couple times to get people who do spinning, and you talked about your knitting and using your daughter's sheep. And
yes.
So you are you doing the whole thing where you shear the sheep, spin the wool? No.
Oh. Sorry.
Oh.
But I do know somebody that does that.
Okay.
No, I tried a while back when she got good at shearing. When she first started shearing, she did it so choppy that the wool wasn't worth trying to do anything with. But she has since gotten very good at it. And at one point I was going to do that. I was going to wash the wool and card it. And I got as far as washing it, and that was a backbreaking effort. And then I went to card it, and that was so...
Takes
forever, and it's tedious, and I can't see how people do it and enjoy it, but then, you know, other people say the same thing about, you know, knitting and handwork, but still,
because carding it's when you get all the junk out of the wool, right? Burrs and stuff. I mean, is that what it is, or
no? That's skirting it. That's when you skirt it, and then you pick it all apart, pick all the stuff out of it. That's called skirting. You take all the yucky wool out, then you wash it, and then you dry it, and then you card it, and that's just getting all of the fibers going in the same direction.
Oh.
So then you can start spinning it. But I gave up on that. And you can send a whole fleece off with dirt and all, and they send it back to you all in nice little skeins.
Oh. Carding the wool is like brushing a sheep for 4 weeks.
Hours and hours and hours.
It's pretty much. If you had to take a curly-haired sheep and make it have straight hair, that's exactly what it would be. Imagine how long that would take, and you wouldn't have the company of the sheep.
Right. Which is okay. So I decided that it is worth paying somebody else to do that.
So you sent, you boxed up the wool and sent it off and had to, you fix it for me.
Yep. And they sent it back so nicely.
All spun and in skeins and everything?
Yep. All and measured out. They give you an approximation of how long it is, the weight of it.
And did you get it back as yarn or as roving?
I got this last batch back as yarn. The first batch, I thought I wanted to get it back as roving, but I got it back as yarn as well. And then my trial batch, my first batch, they couldn't do anything with except for make batting out of it. So it is actually boxed up and waiting for a quilt.
So, okay, dumb guy here. What's the difference between roving and yarn?
Roving is what they make the yarn out of. You would use that roving to stretch out and spin into yarn. Or you can knit with roving.
Yes, that's what, Gary, do you remember before we even started the podcast, we had talked about the giant knitting. Do you remember that?
Yes.
There's a woman who had started doing these blankets knitting on knitting needles that are like human being sized, made out of PVC pipe. And she makes these giant blankets. So each knitted stitch is probably about 5 inches, right, square. And so she knits out of this roving, which is the unspun wool, and it feels beautiful. Like if the roving itself, because it's not tightly wound yet, right? So it's just this spongy kind of thing. So that was one of the things that I had been interested in trying to do.
I made giant knitting needles so that I could try
it. Did you? And have you tried it yet?
No.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten moving back.
Yeah. So there's a bunch of places you can buy it, although, yeah. you know, I'm sure it's much going to be much better when it's your own sheep, right?
It depends on the sheep.
Perhaps. Yes. But that does look like so much fun, doesn't it?
It does.
Although I feel like I'd have to work out at the gym for like 6 months first to manage it because it's so heavy, right? Yes. To manage those. You see pictures of the woman and the needles. Like you have to sit on the edge of a chair like a cello because right. the needles are so big that, you know, it's like, yeah, they're like the size of children. So
don't you think you could rig it up so that it would be like a cable needle, a circular needle?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely. We have to find like a vacuum hose or something. I'm trying to think of what you could use like flexible.
The cable that you put your dog on. The dog on, maybe.
Yeah, because all it really needs to do is hold the stitch. It doesn't need to be the same diameter as the PVC knitting needle because that's what's going to cause the shape and size of the stitch. And then once it's on the cable itself, it doesn't – because even regular cable needles, the connecting piece is much thinner.
Right.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually.
We need to invent that.
I think you just did.
Well, okay, good.
So, but I think that's actually a really great idea because then you don't have such weighty needles, right? Because it's never all on one needle.
You really only need enough room to make one or two stitches.
Yeah, yeah. That's a much smarter way to do it.
Right here, inventing on the fly. This is fantastic.
Yeah.
So Sarah, so when you get the yarn, is it... Mm-hmm. Is it better, different than yarn you would buy in a store? Same?
It's really it's amazing that it comes back so beautiful because it's just a small mill. They call them mini mills that I send it to. But this yarn came back beautiful. I would say very high quality. Again, the sheep that she got it off of is a good wool sheep. So it's very nice wool.
And they dye it for you and everything?
They can, but I ask them to send it back blended because the sheep is, he's black and white.
Oh.
But he's really not black all the way black. It's, they call it lilac.
Oh.
When these Jacob sheep are less than black and white. So when it blended, it turned into this just beautiful, natural, not quite gray, but I don't know, kind of a grayish brown color, very light. It was gorgeous.
It sounds beautiful.
It is. I am going to hoard it.
How many skeins, how much yarn do you get off of a sheep in one shearing? Is it a lot or?
I think I got a pound of yarn back from that particular sheep. He is a very small sheep. Another Jacob sheep that my daughter has and she sheared, I sent her wool in too. And that sheep, I got back 2 pounds of yarn. So that was, I think I have about 16 skeins.
That's a lot.
Just 16 balls. You know how you wind your own balls? Mm. Yeah. Unfortunately, I did not measure it. I didn't think to do that.
So what are your plans for this yarn then? What is it lending itself to?
Well, I made a hat for Kelly because it's the first real thing I could have made out of the wool that we got back. Again, the first batch of wool that we sent off was from a sheep that didn't have the best wool. So that I might make a rug out of. But this particular bunch of yarn, I think I might try to make her a vest or a sweater. Because it's her sheep.
Yeah, that's really neat.
Well, how cool for her to say, hey, yeah, this sweater came from my sheep. That's neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she's starting out trying to work up a little bit of a sheep business, but not so just for wool.
What does it take then to keep a sheep? What are the requirements?
Well, I'm not sure there's too many requirements. We have about 2 acres in the back of our house that's fenced off. And so they just stay back there. And she feeds them grain and hay until the summertime. We have some acreage down the road from us, about 3 miles. And right now, most of her sheep are out on that pasture. And it takes just rotating the pasture over the summertime. And they eat grass and drink water and survive. They're happy.
Not much to it then.
She does a lot of work. She's always going down there making sure nothing's wrong with them. She's always making sure that they're clean, their hooves are kept. Hooves are a big thing for sheep. They can have trouble with their feet and then they become sick. So she's very careful about the way her sheep are. But
fenced in, you can just leave them in the summer and just let them just roam around.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep, they're happy.
I thought they had to come in at night or something.
No, she always has something for them to go into if they want to. But even rain, snow, I know they stand out. We had a blizzard in February, and those sheep stood out there and had a foot of snow on their backs, and they just love it.
Wow.
So, they're covered in wool.
Yes, that is kind of, I'm sure they're warm because wool.
yeah, wool.
and cool in the summer, too. Even though she does shear them, they can go without being sheared. That just looks so bad.
Yeah, I got to believe freshly sheared sheep is not an attractive thing.
It's kind of funny looking, actually. But so she does a good job with those animals, and she's trying to build up a business. She's getting some contacts, looking for some people that might know. This has nothing to do with the wool, but she's looking for a USDA butcher shop so that she can, market her meat. But it's good.
That's good. Yeah, she learns those business things. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Ah, fascinating. Yes. I just find that whole process really interesting, and I look back. You think back in history when people, that's how they had to come up with yarn, is they had to go through that whole process, and boy, you...
And that's what they did. Yeah. If they weren't cooking or foraging for food, they were making clothing or repairing clothing.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, if you have no choice, you have no choice.
That's right.
Okay, Mary, you have to help us out here. Now, you had brought up that you could explain the difference with satin stitching. So we're just going to jerk around here from subject to subject. No transition, no sense, no nothing. But Christine and I were talking about satin stitch. I think it was a Wednesday one. And I just said that I only knew to, go down at the top and up at the bottom. And Christine talked about, where you go the length at the top and then you just go over one thread and come back up again. So, I just was told that's not the way to do it, and you said that you could explain that. So I'm curious what the difference in the two ways of doing satin stitch and why it matters.
Well, I think Christine touched on it, and she got it, really, is that actually there are two different stitches. One is satin stitch, and the other is called surface satin stitch. So when you're stepping over and then taking your long stitch and then stepping over and taking your long stitch, what happens is you conserve thread, certainly. And that's a nice thing, but the tension changes on the stitch. So it distorts the stitch at the edges.
Right.
So when you want a true satin stitch, you're going to pass the length on the back and on the front to maintain that tension. But when you work a certain surface satin stitch, that's typically done with laid work. So you might work a surface satin stitch and then couch a trellis design over that or something like that. So if you're doing extremely long surface satin stitches and then couching another design over that to hold those stitches in place, you don't need the length on the back for tension. And in fact, you wouldn't want that length because that really would be a huge waste of thread. But with regular satin stitch, first of all, the stitches are usually small. You're not covering huge spaces with it because it over time, the stitches can loosen up and not lay as nicely. The longer they get, the more chance there is of them getting messed up. And then with surface satin stitch, though, you can do very long stitches, but then you're going to have to couch something over it to hold it in place. So that's kind of the big difference, I guess.
So pretty rare that you would do the surface satin stitch, pretty rare instances.
Oh, no, I do it a lot.
Of course, Mary does it a lot.
I do it in like ecclesiastical work or, you know, silk and gold work. I have a project on my website that Marian Medallion, the whole background of that, which is worked in an ivory flat silk, which is a non-twisted filament silk. And the stitches are very long. They're in some areas, they're about maybe 4 inches long, and they're all worked in a surface satin stitch. But then I took a very tiny gold work thread and I just couched it in they call it a vermicelli pattern, where you're just kind of twisting a little path that just meanders all over the place and little ripples and stuff all over the surface of that. So I ended up with a beautiful ivory background that has that high sheen that comes with filament silk, and then just this gold sort of twisted all over the surface of it. So it's a nice technique to use for a background. You could do it, you could use it in needlepoint as well, or cross stitch or anything, because the idea is, well, obviously not cross stitch because it's not a cross stitch, but in, you know, counted techniques, the idea is that you're making this background of long stitches. And as long as you couch something over it to hold those in place, well, then you're good. So.
Yeah, I remember. Now I remember when you did that vermicelli thing. I found that. Yeah, because you were trying to be random and not fall into a pattern on that, as I recall.
Right.
A tough
Which
thing
is
to
really
do.
Hard to do. Yeah,
but it's so much fun. It's like doodling, you know. It's just kind of relaxing, and you just kind of. But then occasionally you come into a corner, and you think, "Oh no, how did I get here? And how do I get out?" So.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, that random thing is so tough, because at the our needlepoint guild meeting here a couple days ago, our guest was Diane Herman, and Walking the Water's Edge design. Of course, people know about that. And somebody said, "Yeah, I have that done, except for the foam part where you have to do daisies or whatever open-eyed things randomly." And she said, "And I can't get it random." She said, "I don't know how to do random." And everybody chuckled, because it is, you're so used to following exactly what it should be, and then somebody says, "Now just be random," and
and especially I think that's more the case too if you're used to working on a grid, like a canvas or a cross stitch fabric, because the looseness of randomness is not the same. You know, so if you're used to doing surface embroidery, then you're probably a little looser, if that makes sense. I mean, when it comes to stitching anyway.
Well, because you have more options. Yeah.
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 Yeah. So.
Okay. So there we have it. All right. I learned something. Yeah. So it is a legitimate stitch. Because I was just told, don't ever do it that way. It'll look terrible. Yeah. And
it just depends on what you're doing. It's a legitimate stitch, but usually it's over larger spaces. And it usually has something couched over the top of it.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So there you have it, Christine. Yep.
Got it.
Excellent. Excellent. Yep. And then I have to explore this, Mary, because last time we just ran out of time. And this your fascination with monograms. I mean, you have a lot of monograms, but also tied into that is you find these ancient books online and download them. And you really opened a world for me for those stuff that's completely out of copyright and that you can download and there's patterns. Yeah. There's a million patterns. It's amazing what's available.
Oh, yeah. And if you're not familiar with it, you know, for those of you who knit and crochet, Antique Pattern Library online.
I just found that. And it's amazing.
They have all kinds of public domain old patterns for crochet, knitting, embroidery, needlepoint, cross stitch, a lot of the monogram stuff and everything. Antique Pattern Library.
Oh.
It's funny because I found it because I was looking for alphabets.
Right.
Sampler alphabets. Mm-hmm. Because I was thinking about, because, you know, I haven't done a planned sampler that somebody else designed, so I have to do one that I think up myself first because that's, you know, because I'm an idiot sometimes. but I was thinking about, I had an idea of what I wanted to stitch, and I couldn't find a sampler that had those things in it. So okay. I started thinking, okay, well, what would go into designing that? And the first things, of course, because what would be important in this would have been words. So I started looking for alphabets and mm-hmm. alphabet patterns, and it led me right there. And it's a wealth of resources as far as patterns and you know, historical pieces. It's really definitely worth checking out.
Yeah, and it's a you can download, you know, the things directly to your computer and save them on your computer. They're PDFs.
Mm-hmm.
It is a nonprofit, so you can actually donate to them to help keep it going, but they don't charge for anything. So that's nice. Another resource too, if you're looking for alphabets, is it's a blog and it's called Pattern Maker Charts. And I think it's on Blogspot. And that is the person who runs that has cataloged, I think, most of all, if not all, the old Sajou patterns, alphabet patterns and booklets.
Yep. It's already came up.
Yeah. And then also Alexandra and a lot of Russian, Ukrainian, different alphabets and everything on there. So that's a very good resource if you're looking for especially counted cross-stitch alphabets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these Sajouds are beautiful because I'm looking at them as we were talking about them. They're really pretty.
Yep. So now you're going to be a monogram freak.
I don't know. Perhaps.
Come to the dark side.
Right. Either that or I'm just going to start embroidering like poems and not stop and do anything else, right? It's just going to be words and borders.
That's right.
I work in a factory, though, so it's probably not going to be nice words. You know?
Well, there's always a place for everything out
there. There is, right? Right?
Yeah.
Just talk to Judy Dench.
Yeah, exactly.
She stitches some things, and they're not always nice, but, you know, yes. She's Judy Dench. So.
Well, you know, it's funny because I was thinking this exact sort of thought process, and then I said, you know, I bet there is such a thing. So I then, of course, went to the Google, and there's a designer, and I don't remember the name of the designer, and I don't know if I'll have to find it, but it's all sort of sampler-esque, like if you can imagine the quintessential Home Sweet Home t- type yes. of counted crosses, except things that your mother wouldn't want you to say in public.
That's right.
I have seen that.
And they are fabulous.
Yeah, that's kind of funny.
They are funny.
But it reminds me kind of demotivators, though. You know, you're expecting some great motivational something, and then you read it, and you're like, oh gosh. Yeah.
So Mary, when it comes to monograms, I mean, I like what you do with them, and I can see that obviously you enjoy it, but also they make nice little projects where you can experiment with things without getting involved in a great big design. And I mean,
that's why I like them. That's why I like them. They, you know, it takes on a complicated monogram, it might take a weekend, you know, of stitching. So it doesn't take a long time to stitch them. And gosh, there are enough people in my family that there's always someone to give one to, you know? So
I haven't gotten one yet.
I know.
Uh-oh.
But the other way I come
move
by
along
them
quickly.
Is,
move along.
Okay, sorry. I was just that's right. But the other way I come across or I come by the alphabets that I have is that I started collecting the old publications before they became a thing, really. Mm-hmm. Because I would come across them at library sales where they were 25 cents or garage sales, things like that. And, you know, I just picked them up because I liked them. And I didn't think I didn't know that I would ever do anything with them. So I have a good stack of just all these old, beautiful publications that are falling apart. But, you know, so I've scanned a lot of them and cleaned them up and as, you know, as I can on my computer. And then I work from those as well, just for alphabet ideas. So that's kind of fun.
And how many books? I have a sense your book collection is out of control.
Gary, there is a point when you have too many books. I never thought I would say that because I love books, but I have a lot of books. I've been cleaning out in my workroom and trying to rearrange for bookshelf space especially. And I don't know how many books I have. It's just crazy. But a very kind reader about a month ago, I guess, she didn't have anyone to give her book collection to because she's older and she just needed to pass it on to someone she thought would appreciate it. Mm. And so one day I got a little note in the mail and it said, I'm sending you my book collection. It should arrive in a couple days. And sure enough,
not would you like it, but it's coming.
It's coming. And you know, that's kind of exciting because it's kind of like Christmas. And I thought, oh, well, you know, this will be kind of neat. And sure enough, a couple days later, these two big boxes, and they were just packed with books. And many of them really are, I think, treasures because they come from, I would say, the 70s and a little bit earlier. They're not really 70s embroidery. They're, you know, kind of the cultural embroidery styles from other countries were very popular then. And so you had a lot of designers and needlework people who were into kind of like a Vet Stanton, you know, into studying these different cultural embroidery types. And they wrote books on them. And so, you know, there's Norwegians, all kinds of Scandinavian, Polish, Czechoslovakian, Hungarian, Indian. There's different African books on African embroidery, on Japanese embroidery, Chinese embroidery. So just this huge variety of these books. You know, Pakistan, I mean, I could go on and on. And yeah, they landed on my doorstep. But when I saw the boxes, my first thought was, oh, wow, I really do have to clean off my bookshelves. So that's what I've been doing.
So, Sarah, is Mary's workroom as messy as she would have us believe? Or have you only seen it cleaned up?
Hey, no family secrets.
Okay, so we were at the family reunion in Kansas, and I went to Mary's house one time, popped in and left, and never even saw it.
Oh, that's right.
Oh. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah.
We were busy.
Yeah, we were. We were really busy.
Yep. It was a busy, busy, busy time. So I cannot say what her room really looks like.
She cannot confirm nor deny. Okay.
Exactly. I have seen it on FaceTime.
Yeah, it's pretty messy.
And again, you know, whatever.
It's not as messy now. I'm in the last stages, so
yes, I've seen it messier than it is now.
But it's, you know, last year it just kind of built up because I just didn't have the energy to keep up with stuff, and so household things would go out there, and it would just accumulate. And I just let it accumulate. So really this year, I said, okay, now it's time to weed through it all. So that's what's happening.
Okay. Well, I have a trade show in Kansas City in the fall. So, what, you're 2 hours out of Kansas?
Yeah.
Kansas City?
Keep cleaning.
Yep.
Keep cleaning, Mary.
Yeah, I don't know if I have time.
2 hours. 2 hours. Holy smokes. Okay.
No, but look, if you're going to be in Kansas City, drop me a line and I'll come meet you for coffee.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, man. Yep.
I'll let you know. But yeah, that's in the fall. I don't get many trade shows in Kansas City. I guarantee you that.
No.
Oh, but you should, because Kansas City is the place to be.
Yeah. It's
Everything's up to date.
It's amazing there.
That was not convincing.
But you know, you should bring Christine because she really needs to experience the Midwest.
Yes.
I haven't had, well, I mean, I've been there. Actually, I have to go to Wisconsin probably in August. Oh. So I will have some Midwest, right?
Yeah, it's in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Are you going to make it up to Fargo?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm not really sure exactly where in Wisconsin I will be. I was just informed of this today. So.
And when we talked with the Nordic Needle people, I had my printer city. I had the wrong prairie. It's and now I can't remember the name of it, but it actually is not that far from Fargo. So, okay. Yeah, I got to find a way to get there. Yeah. Because it was
definitely...
Go ahead.
Is Nordic Needle the only thing in Fargo?
Probably.
What is in Fargo?
No, actually, I went. I did go. I was in Minnesota for something, and I said, you know what? I'm pretty close, and it was only about a 5-hour drive. So I drove up there, and that was, I don't know, probably 10 years ago, I think, 9 years ago. And the shop is fantastic, so it's definitely worth going to.
Yeah, I got to find my way there. Yep.
Yeah. And they have a map, or at least they did when I was there. They have a map where you can put a pin for, you know, your look, where you're coming from.
Oh.
And I think on Tuesdays, I don't know if they still do this, but if I remember correctly, on Tuesdays, they give out-of-towners a discount based on your mileage.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Oh, now there we go. Kind of fun.
Yeah.
It's kind of fun.
Yeah. All right.
Huh.
All right. Gear shift. Sarah, you say that you're trying needlepoint And now, you know, we have done terrible things to Christine since we started this little venture. She's developing a stash and needle pointing and everything. So this needle point project that you have that you say is in a bag waiting for your mood to strike, is that first one?
No, it's not. It's an old one. And I've done it before. A long time ago, somebody asked me to do seat cushions for her in needlepoint, and I had to give them back because once you put a price on your time, it's no fun.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know if I really like needlepoint, but I'm going to try it. I'm going to keep going. I got to get off the knitting jag, and I still need to get this quilt going that back started back up again. So it's probably on the back burner a little farther.
Sounds like it's not on the back burner. It's in the drawer at the bottom of the oven.
No, because I don't like to. I do not like to not finish things. I love to finish everything. And I used to not start anything until I finished something. But I've gotten over that.
Okay.
Well, something you might not know about Sarah, too, is that she works full time and she's also a college student. So,
oh, my.
She doesn't have as much time. And a mother.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. But, so everything comes and goes depending on what classes I'm taking.
Yes. Well, with all that going, that's healthy. Yep.
And I do like to do the quick things. The quilt that I'm working on right now, it's all hand-pieced. So I have set that up so that I can take one square, and everything I need to finish that square is in a little lunchbox, a little metal lunchbox. And I just grab it and go if that's the thing I want to work on. But it might be a knitted baby hat or something like that, you know.
Now, when you talk about hand making quilts, it reminds me of my grandma. That's what she did, and we still have a couple of them. But it was the old, you know, take old shirts and other worn clothes and make them into quilts, which, you know, the old these things need to get repurposed so we can stay warm in the winter. And I remember my grandma assembling things by hand and doing the quilting part and Yeah, that's
one of our aunts did that. She made a ton of quilts. Aunt Dot, remember?
Oh, that's
Mary?
Right. Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. But mine, unfortunately, much to my husband's chagrin, I go to the fabric store and then come back with a stash.
you can't not, though, because when you see a pretty quilt fabric, you can't. Mm-hmm. And the thing with quilting, I think that's different than something like knitting. Like knitting, I think I don't do that because I tend to make bigger things like blankets and things like that. So I know that I'll buy something for a project because if I just buy a couple of skeins, I'll never have enough to do whatever it is that I want to do. And so then I just have 47 balls of yarn that I can't use for anything because they don't match anything, right? But quilting is a whole different story because – you can do fat quarters of lots and lots of things, and they actually potentially could get used for something. So
potentially, yes.
Right, potential, right. Well, that's the key word.
Of course, if you stitch it by hand, then you're like, nobody touched this.
Yeah, exactly.
You may look at it, but do not touch it. Oh, well.
Uh-huh. Yep. Mary?
I did.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry. No, tell it.
Well, I did try my hand at long arm quilting. I took a class, and before the class, one of our sisters, she turns out a quilt in a weekend, and then a quilt top in the weekend because she machine stitches it. And then I would tell her, you know, that it's cheating and all this other stuff. And so her response would always be, "I finished 10 quilts this year. How many did you finish?" I'd be like, none. So So she started doing the long arm quilting, and so I thought, oh, I'll just go and see what it's all about. And I might have come around. That might be how my next quilt gets quilted.
When you do long arm, is that that big long machine, the sewing machine on a rail type thing? Is that what that is?
Yes.
Those are impressive. Nice.
Yeah, and they're neat. I mean, they really do a great job and fast.
So this may be a crazy question, but I wonder if you could rent them, because I have a quilt top that has been sitting here for longer than my son has been alive, and he's going into to ninth grade. So I was once I discovered that long arm quilting was a thing, and then I discovered that you could send your quilt top to someone and they would do it for you.
Right.
Then it was in about a space of 3 seconds. It was, oh my goodness, that's the greatest thing ever. Right. Oh, that's the worst cheating.
Yep.
And now I still have this quilt top here because I can't get over the idea that that would be cheating.
Well, our sister Susie, she took hers over to somebody. She lives over in Massachusetts, and started using the machine. And she's one of three people that they let rent the machine from them. So she goes over there and for $75 can quilt two or three lap quilts. This place up in New York that I go to, and I can't think of the name of it, of course. Shoot. I went up there because it was a quilt shop and a yarn shop. So it was like the perfect combination. But now they're getting rid of all of their yarn and they have two beautiful long arm machines. And the class that I took, it takes 5 hours and you're welcome to come back and take another class. But for every hour, it's something like, $20 for every hour, and they will help you along for the first few times that you come up to use it until they determine that you're okay enough to use it without their help. Mm-hmm. And then you just rent it for $20 an hour.
So for, let's say, and I know this varies depending on the pattern that you choose, it would vary wildly, but like just middle of the road kind of quilt pattern that you would use, how long would it take to do like a regular bed size quilt to do the quilting part, long arm?
You could probably do it you can set your quilt up ahead of time. They have the straps that you would put on the machine, and I purchased them. They're just like a huge zipper.
Yeah.
And you go ahead and set that all up so that when you get there, all you have to do is zip it onto their machine and go. So I would say probably a couple hours, 3 hours.
Really? Wow. Mm-hmm.
Very fast. And it's amazing how in the class that I took, they're like, here, you do it and see how it turns out. And then at the end of the class, so you're doing this strip basically, so you can see your progression from very bad to not too bad at the end. So it's worth looking into.
Yeah, I think so. It'd be nice to have this quilt doing something besides sitting in a box.
I know. And
literally, it's 15 years now. That's how long it's been sitting there.
I know. It took me 8 years to finish my last one.
Right.
And I've been working on this particular one, probably 4 years now. So
what's your longest one then?
Well, I started a pineapple pattern hand piece in my second year of college. So, and I have probably, and I thought, well, I'm going to do at least a double bed size quilt, you know, and I have maybe 40 squares done. And they're just 8-inch squares, and there's 49 pieces in each 8-inch square, so they're tiny.
Yes,
and it's all hand sewn.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's still in a closet somewhere.
Good job. You win. Okay, place that I was talking about is called Patchwork Plus Quilt Shop in Marcellus, New York. Yes. Just so you know.
Check that out. Yeah.
And you can rent time on it. Now, that's up near Syracuse, so it's probably a little farther than you want to go. However, it is beautiful up there.
Road trip.
Yep.
Road trip. Yep. That's a long road trip.
Yeah, but it's
I'm taking my quilt to Syracuse for the weekend. See ya.
Yeah. There you go. Bye. Yeah. My quilt and I have a date.
Yeah.
All right, Mary, get me over a hump here.
Okay.
So the only embroidery work I've done has been when the pattern is printed on the cloth for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, a lot of your designs I would like to do, but that whole put the pattern on the ground cloth is just a hurdle. I can't see. It just looks so ominous to me that I can't get over it. So is it, am I making more out of it than it is? Is it tedious work?
Well, it depends on how you do it. There are so many ways.
I don't want to hear depends. I don't want depends.
But I'm going to tell you how to do it the easiest way.
Okay.
I'll tell you how to do it the easiest way. And it's a plug. It's a plug for Sublime Stitching. Jenny Hart has come up with an iron-on transfer pen that has a very fine tip. And it works like a dream. The only disadvantage is that it won't wash out. So anything that you iron on with it, you have to cover with stitches. But the line is very fine, and so it's a great little pen. So if you're afraid of transferring, that is a very easy way to go, and it's not expensive. So if that's what if that's your hang up is transferring the design, then get a pen.
Okay, what's the name of the pen again? Because it really is the hang up. So,
okay, so it's Sublime Stitching.
Sublime Stitching.
And it's their fine tipped iron on transfer pen. And you can Google it, it'll come right up.
Okay.
I also reviewed them on my website so you can see how they work, but easy, and it's a fine line, and it works so much better than the iron-on pencils that are red and different things like that, and those never ever have worked for me. And then Sulky also has a line of iron-on transfer pens, but they're very heavy, and you get a very thick line with them. But Jenny Hart's iron-on transfer pen is, I think it's just a breakthrough. It's great.
Did you review that recently?
I don't know.
Because I read everything you write, but and when it comes to all these transfer things, so many of them I can tell they just aren't going to work well, and so they're in one ear and out the other kind of thing. So it doesn't stick with me. But the pricking thing where you prick it with a pencil. Prick and pound. Yeah. All that stuff just looks like I have such a mess at the end that it scares me. I assume you put the pattern down, you do it reverse flipped over so that when you iron it, it's right side.
That's correct.
Okay. And it's a fine enough line.
You would just print the pattern on your printer. So if, like, you could download a PDF from Needle and Thread, and then you print the pattern, and then you turn your pattern over, the paper over, and you just trace that line, and then you turn the paper back over onto your fabric and iron it. Actually, you should always, when you do an iron-on transfer, you should iron your fabric first so that it's hot, and pin the corners of the paper on so that it doesn't shift. Mm. And then iron it on by pressing down on the iron. I mean, you don't have to like put your body weight into it or anything, but you lift and place the iron rather than rub it back and forth. And then you can lift a corner of the paper to see how the transfer is. And if it's to your liking, then you're finished. It's simple.
And okay, these are just dumb guy questions. So when you're ironing, I assume you're ironing on a hard surface. Like you wouldn't use the ironing board with a pad on it.
Oh, no, I just use my,
just a regular ironing board.
Yeah, my ironing board with the cover on it.
Oh, yep. Okay.
And it's, actually, I even pad my ironing board with flour sack towels, just because if I'm ironing embroidery, I turn them upside down. I turn the embroidery upside down and iron the back.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't mash the embroidery. But yeah, so it's a padded surface. Yep.
Okay. There's the train. Outstanding. We got a train. Sir. Yes. Victory.
lucky you. I reviewed that pen in 2015, so it was a while ago. It was May of 2015.
Okay. All right. I'm looking that up. So, okay. So you just got to realize that that's not coming out. That blue ink is not coming out, but you also don't have to worry about it bleeding out when you wash.
That's right. So as long as you're covering the embroidery, you're good. Yeah. Uh-huh. And, or as long as you're covering the design, you're good.
Right, right.
And then there are other, you know, it's not going to work, for example, on dark fabric.
Yeah.
So there are other ways that you can go about transferring a design on dark fabric. I usually use dressmaker's carbon, white or yellow dressmaker's carbon. And you use that just like you would carbon paper from ages and ages ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same concept, but with that, you really do need to be on a hard surface and, you know, use a ballpoint pen to get a good transfer. And then, of course, there are a dozen other ways to transfer embroidery designs.
Yeah, there seems to be, you know, everybody can have a preference type thing, but they all look just, I just fear that I would get done and I would have this pattern that was kind of similar to what the original was, and I'd be really frustrated with it. Sounds like this pen would work great. Cause I'd like to, it's just one of those things where it looks like fun to get one of your eBooks, one of your monogram eBooks, and just do a little simple project like that just for the fun of it. Cause I look at it sitting in hotel rooms when I'm on the road, and it's just a simple thing to do.
And well, the ebook that's the most fun if you're looking for fun stitching is that Stitch Sampler Alphabet. I had so much fun putting that together just because it's got 65 stitch combinations in it. So you're learning all these stitches and combining them, and you're coming out with a little finished project, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll do the plug for you, folks. She has a ton of ebooks, not a ton, but a whole lot of ebooks. With all kinds of patterns and instructions. So you just go to Needle and Thread and check them out and buy them.
Thanks.
that was a direct order. Go buy them.
Yeah. Go buy them all.
Yeah. So Sarah, hey. tell me about the, I just love the birch disc that you made.
Yes.
Tell me about those.
The idea came from when Mary was doing her eggs, when she was embroidering the goose eggs. And a friend of mine at work gave me a bunch of birch discs because they didn't need them anymore. So I stashed them, and I thought maybe I would make a wreath or something out of them. But then Mary was doing the eggs, and I thought, well, that embroidery where the front and the back look exactly the same. What's that called, Mary?
Reversible? Mary.
No, you know, the front looks like the back.
Oh, blackwork?
Blackwork.
Yeah.
Yes. So my thought was I needed something that was like blackwork because I didn't want a yucky back. You know, I didn't want that hot mess on the back of my discs. And So.
Oh, that's right. We have to talk about Mary's hot mess monogram. Oh, yes. Right.
Yes.
So I didn't want a hot mess on the back of Christmas ornaments, and I decided to try very simple, folky looking patterns. A snowflake is perfect for it. Christmas trees, perfect, things like that. So then I tried it, and you have to drill the holes. So you have to punch out the holes first using a template and then drill them. And I use a little Dremel and I determine which holes are going to take the most yarn, make those a little bit bigger, and do those patterns. So that's fun. And they turned out great, and I gave them to a bunch of different people for Christmas, and they were thrilled.
Oh, yeah, because so, they really are neat looking, and you can't get more original than that. That's really neat.
They are different, for sure.
Well, then, eventually, didn't you cut your own birch, too?
Oh, yeah. Yep. We have down the road, we have the piece of property where the sheep are right now, and there's a bunch of black birch back there, and one of my kids was clearing a path back to this old hunting cabin that's back there. And he asked if I would go out back and help. So I'm hauling these little trees that he's cut down out. And I'm like, that smell, it smells so good. What in the world are we smelling? And it was the black birch. And I'm like, oh. So then, of course, I made him cut me sections with the chainsaw, and then I used the little saw down in the basement to make my own discs. So I have a box of those sitting somewhere waiting to be poked and drilled and stitched on.
How do you finish off the threads in those things so they stay?
Well, by the time that you finish your last thread, I use DMC thread because it's everywhere. And I generally just, by the time you have gone through the whole design, I try to get one piece of thread to make it through the whole thing. Even though I know it dulls the thread, I get that. But but it's a pain to switch it. But by the time you get through it, you're pulling it through so tight that I'm actually using pliers to pull that needle through to get the thread. And then I just snip it very close, and it just keeps it snugly tucked in there, one of the holes.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're pretty neat.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. They're fun.
Great.
That's a fun project.
And you can finish it quickly, yes.
Very quick.
But, you know, if you do start to finish, it's not as quick as all that, but once you have drilled the holes into the discs, it's just sitting down and watching a sitcom, and you're finished with one or two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Ah, neat. Well, yay for you. Yeah, that's a good ornament. Different.
It's fun.
Yep. Oh, holy smokes.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how long we've been talking. Wow. Okay, well, we got to get this in because Christine and I were talking about backs of stitching, and Mary, you had mentioned about it was actually within a couple of days of you doing the thing about whether the backs matter or not, and you had that one picture showing the back of a piece you'd done that had thread going everywhere, and we referred to it as a hot mess. But I had a sense that it was just because of the density on the front that there was so much going on in the back. Was that what the case was?
Yeah, and that's exactly it. So it couldn't have been anything else on the back because there's no way that you could start and end threads with that kind of surface embroidery that frequently and end up with less of a mess. So the back ends up looking like confetti, and the front is just heavily encrusted with stitches everywhere except in the voided monogram. And then if you turn over and you look at the back again, it looks like confetti. There are threads traveling, but they're only traveling little distances. That whole thing was only 3.5 inches.
Oh.
So Yeah, so they're only traveling little distances, and there are no threads crossing the voided monogram.
Right.
So the back is doing pretty much what it's supposed to do without interfering with the front. So it is a hot mess, but I kind of like the back on that. It just reminds me of confetti. And every time I see the back, I think, you know, that's kind of fun. And I think I like it better than the front. You
know? Well, with that kaleidoscope series, that, you know, when I saw that, it's like, you know, because you're working on these kaleidoscope things you're doing.
Yeah.
And it struck me as that. It just, you know, when you're a kid looking through those tubes and just all the colors everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's so much scope for, well, no pun intended, but there's so much scope for ideas, designs, threads, stitches on those kind of things. So I'm excited about that series. I just wish I had 12 arms and 48 hours in the day, you know.
Is that going to become an ebook, the Kaleidoscope series?
It is, and I'm also planning on using it for I'm building another section of the website that is just going to have my designs on it that I've stitched, so that I'm not kind of overlapping with, so there's not a confusion what's mine and what is a kit, you know,
okay.
Somebody else's kit. So I'm building that section. And I don't know when that's going to launch. So the kaleidoscopes may come out in ebook format before that actually happens, or simultaneously. We'll see.
One more, we got to wrap up, but I just have three questions. So when you do when I buy an ebook, and I'll admit I have not purchased one of your ebooks, am I getting a PDF, or what format do they come in?
Yeah, they're PDFs because they're just the most universal. They're easy to print. You can carry them around on your tablets, on your phones. You can have it on your computer, on your laptop, and you can populate it in on every device. It doesn't matter. You're not limited with that. As long as you're not, you know, populating it on everybody else's device. But
yes. Yeah, please don't do that.
Yeah,
Buy your own.
That's right. And then you have the ease of printing, and you also have the convenience of only printing what you need. So you may not actually need to print the whole ebook. You might just need, for example, the stitch instruction. Or you might just be doing this one project in that ebook. So you might just print that. So you don't actually have to print the whole thing. You just can print what you need if you need to print it. But if you take your tablet with you or your mobile device, you might just look at it on that and save paper and ink. So it's just the convenience of that. And it is, you just get a download link after you make the purchase and you download it.
Yeah.
And then if you ever have a problem or you can't find it or whatever, you just drop me an email and I send it to you again. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that's straightforward. I can handle that.
Yep. Yeah, it's easy.
All right. We got to end this.
Okie doke.
Yep. But
that means
there's a whole bunch of questions still hanging out there. So you got to come back. But,
Hey, you know, I've got six sisters we could add to this.
Oh, no.
I'm just kidding.
Do we all sound exactly alike?
Probably not.
I don't think you two do.
Oh.
I have two sisters.
If you put six of us together,
yeah,
we all
I have
would.
Two sisters, and we sound exactly alike.
Yeah. That's got to be tough.
Okay.
We wouldn't do that to the world, so.
No.
All right, that's it, folks. Mary and Sarah, thank you very much. Really
thank
a great
time.
Thank
you so
time.
Much.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, and that's it for this week for Fiber Talk. Thanks for listening.